Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my guest is JJ Sharp. JJ is an accomplished artist, metalsmith, and lifelong experiencer of the paranormal. Based in the American Southwest, she draws inspiration from the desert's quiet expanses and spends much of her time exploring unusual phenomena, interests that both shape her artwork and her writing. Her new memoir, Backwards Time, chronicles a lifetime of uncanny experiences, including sleep paralysis, psychic dreams, out-of-body encounters, NDEs, and brushes with the unexplained. Woven through these events is her journey of breaking free from cycles of narcissistic abuse, leading to profound personal transformation. JJ's work sits at the crossroads of creativity, resilience, and the mysteries that blur the line between the seen and the unseen. I've been really looking forward to the discussion. JJ is a dear friend, introduced to JJ through another mutual friend who is likewise a dear friend, Amira. I'm really looking forward to this, JJ. Without any further ado, tell us a bit about yourself and, the inspiration for writing the book.
Hey James, thanks so much for inviting me on. It's good to be here. I recently moved to Arizona about a year ago and from Chicago. I've been kind of all over the place. I was based on the East Coast for most of my life and spent some time on the West Coast. And I'm an artist and a metalsmith and have been through quite a bit of unusual encounters for my entire life. And over, people have said to me that I should write a book about my experiences. And I always kind of laughed it off because although I have enjoyed writing in the past, I kind of got away from it and didn't feel very, I've never written a book before. So I just kind of thought it was for other people to do, but I kept hearing it over and over, and I was having a discussion with my mom and dad while I was eating dinner with them at their place, and I guess I was telling them a story they had never heard before. So my mom kind of blurted out, "You should write a book." And it was funny because I had been sort of mulling it over the day before and never mentioned it, and she said that, and I said, "All right, let me give this a shot." So I immediately started putting together the cover for it, which is this photograph actually was taken here in Arizona in Mystery Castle outside of Phoenix, and I took it in 2016 when I visited my folks. And the title, Backwards Time, my jewelry brand is Reine de Blanc, which means the White Queen or the Queen of White. It's a reference back to the Looking Glass, Alice in Wonderland, and all of that. And I've always kind of identified with the White Queen living in backwards time. So I decided to call the book that because it is a memoir, so it's looking back through my life in backwards time, basically.
Well, that's fascinating because the desert Southwest, if you've ever read the book Midnight Song, which I loaned it out, of course, I never got it back.
Huh.
It's difficult to find these days, but it's basically about the past life reminiscences of a couple and one lady in particular, and she remembered a life in the desert Southwest a long time ago when she was here as an alien, essentially a Palladian, and all these wars and conflicts were going on between her species, the Palladians, her people, and other groups, right? And so the outcome, one outcome of that was a ruinous war, which turned the desert Southwest into the desert Southwest. It wasn't always like that. And there are landmarks, there are plateaus, buttes, and what have you. Not only do you have what I consider to be the standard gigantic tree trunks that have been sawed off at the base, right?
Right.
But you also have buttes and so-called geographical features that, if you didn't know any better, those could have been like artificial structures that have been destroyed or something. Think about the damage to the D&M pyramid on Mars. You can see in the overhead imagery that one corner of it looks like it had been blasted, right? And so when I read that book and I thought about, oh, that's interesting how the Southwest Desert is just so arid and deserty, and how did that happen? Well, apparently it was due to a cosmic war. And then there you are. And I can speak for myself. When I lived in Arizona, nothing quite matches sunsets and sunrises in a desert. It's an entirely different mystical experience. I can see doorways opening up all over the place, really. Take us back to your childhood, because I was reading your book last night, and you lived in a small town, small towns, and it just shows how pervasive these oppressive control systems are. One would think that for the most part, kids growing up would be safe and relatively safe in a small community type environment. But in your case, because of your bloodlines, your family background, and the activities that are going on in these small locales, you kind of got reeled into some of this. Could you take us back to your childhood and what you experienced?
Yeah, sure. My encounter coming into the world was unusual because my mother, we both have the same, it's like an autoimmune disease called endometriosis, and she was somehow able to have my brother, and then years later, she was using an IUD and trying to prevent any more pregnancies because of the disease and the growths that happen. And it's not very pleasant. It's a very it's a pervasive disease. So anyway, she was trying to control all that, and somehow 7 years later, from my brother, 7.5 years later, I somehow was conceived anyway, even with birth control and a disease that does not have a good fertility rate. So I came in, and I have a lot of early memories, but the one that stands out most is when I broke my leg when I was 3 years old, and I was in the care of like a neighborhood daycare lady that lived down the street and watched other people's kids there at her house. And for whatever reason, I was taking a nap in her bed. And my memory of the event was just waking up abruptly from hitting the floor, like I had fallen out of bed. And I remember I have like just flashes of it where I was just jumping around on one leg and crying, and it was in a whole world of hurt. And that's all I remember about that. And then I remember being in the hospital, with my leg and traction hanging above me and certain visitors and that and the other, and then being in a half body cast for several weeks. And I learned recently in the last few years or so that that is actually not what happened. So my memory of it was this one thing. And my folks told me that the woman who I refer to as Mrs. Moss in the book had gotten so angry with me because apparently I had wet the bed or something. And she pulled me out of the bed and threw me into the bathroom down on the hard tile floor and broke my femur bone. And so apparently, the police were contacted and attorneys were contacted, and I don't think my folks never pressed charges, but she left town. And so that's my real earliest memory of childhood right there. And then from an early age, I'd say like in the next year or so, I remember just staying up all night in my room. I couldn't sleep. I've always had sleep problems. I've always had chronic insomnia and any number of things going on there. So I remember just sitting up in the wee hours of the night, staring out the window, and being in a small town, which was really on the edge of rural, you could see all the stars. It was a very clear night sky there. And I would just sit and stare out the window all night. And I always felt like I was waiting for something. And as I got a bit older, I started thinking of it as the event. I always, in my mind, called it the event. And that was what I was here for. So just from a very early age, I had that concept in my head that I was in this place, in this world, for some event to happen. And I'm not sure how much I should ramble on about my childhood, but it
Well,
was a pretty,
yeah, just the
I will
salient points,
say.
the formative experiences, and then we can, transition to, later life, girlhood and adolescence, because it all factors in, the backstory, the dreaded backstory.
Yeah, so I always had a lot of nightmares, just tons of nightmares and really vivid dreams. And I remember as I was getting older, I have an early memory of being in my nightgown and being outside in the front yard and seeing a light shining over me, just right above the house. And I don't remember anything about it. I just remember being out there having this light on me. And I'm not sure if it's an actual memory or a dream, but that's what I had. And as I got older, I started to, I guess, well, I'm skipping ahead to my teen years a little bit here. So right around the age of 15, I had just, gotten into high school and all, and I started having sleep paralysis. So my first encounter with that was basically an OB where I woke up abruptly and was paralyzed. I couldn't see, and I kept struggling to get my eyes open. And as I did, I saw these three beings at the end of my bed in front of my closet. And they were all different heights, but they looked similar. And they looked like what people would call a classic gray. But they were different shapes a bit. They were similar in color. They were all sort of a dark gray brown color, but they were different heights and sort of different shaped bodies. And all of a sudden, I was sucked out of my body, like I was floating above the bed and struggling to see around me, but I couldn't get my eyes open. And then I was pulled out of the house and immediately sort of like teleported up out into space with these beings and was looking down at the earth. And they were showing me telepathically history of the Earth and flashing imageries of war and different time periods that had gone over the ages with Earth. And they showed me what they called a twin planet. It had a name, but I don't know what it was. It was something with an A. And they showed me that it had crashed into the Earth. And then I was suddenly just thrown back down to earth and into my bed and sort of did one of those jolts on the bed. And I was, I'm not sure if this is the same time because it seemed to happen a couple of times at least, but I remember struggling. Like I knew I was back in my room in my bed and I was trying to start to move around because I was still paralyzed in the sleep paralysis. And I ended up falling on the floor next to my bed on the hardwood floor. And I got my eyes open just enough to see these glowing green rocks on the floor. And I was trying to grab one. And one of these beings grabbed me and picked me up and threw me on the bed. And then everything stopped. I didn't hear them anymore. They went away, and I was able to start to move again and get my eyes open. And so I was awake. And from then on, I started having pretty much regular sleep paralysis and these kinds of encounters at night.
What happens sometimes is, whether it's a direct result of or indirectly the result of these visitations and encounters, subconsciously or otherwise, we start having these very vivid, at times frightening dreams. And in one of these dreams you had, it was kind of scary to me when I was reading it. It was about this, lack of a better term, like this fabric kind of being that was kind of like sewn together in like Raggedy Ann type fashion. And related in one of the themes in the dreams was like circuses or amusement parks too, which I've had some of those, which I can get into later maybe. But take us through that process, because traditionally one would think that sleeping is a time for healing the body, healing the mind, what have you. And then on top of the sleep paralysis and these visitations, you get these dreams, and sometimes it can come in quite often, and it really just adds up to the trauma level at some level. It is also it impinges and impacts upon our ability to get rest, right? So please, I'd like to hear about those.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I skipped ahead there, but I did start having this reoccurring nightmare after I had broken my leg, or Mrs. Moss had broken my leg. I needed a new daycare, and a new family had moved in. They came from Canada, and so I spent quite a bit of my childhood with them at their house while my folks were working, and sometimes my dad had business trips overseas and would take my mom, so I would stay with them. And I started having this reoccurring nightmare that took place at their house. And I would be in the rec room downstairs with all the other kids. And we would hear something, and I would turn and see this fabric. I called it a fabric monster because it was essentially made of fabric and thread and yarn and buttons all pieced together. And it sounds like it might be cute or something, but it was actually terrifying. And the dream always was in black and white, which is also strange because I pretty much always have dreamed in color. I could probably count on my hands the times I've had black and white dreams in my whole life. And it played out almost like a television show. It had I didn't put this in the book, but it had kind of like some staticky quality to it, as if you're watching an old television. And the fabric monster would sort of systematically murder each child in front of me. And as it was coming for me, I would wake up gasping every time and just be terrorized. And it's true. I mean, what you said before about not getting a restorative rest during sleep. I have had basically my whole life that I can remember, I have not slept well. I always feel exhausted when I wake up, and I have developed chronic health issues, at least partially because of that, because I never really get a good night's sleep.
That's the thing. And I don't know if it was the case with you, but certainly it was the case for me that I felt like I was being monitored. I felt like I was under some kind of surveillance or observation. I felt presences around me as a child. And after a while, I learned just to deal with it. Oh, I feel this feeling again. Sometimes it didn't feel like it was a malevolent presence. Sometimes it was just there. Other times it was almost reassuring. It just depended on the energy and the feel. But the cumulative effect was, as nighttime, as dusk drew near, I began to have, misgivings and fear would set in, right? Because, the onset of night and, the boogeyman, all this stuff. And then back then, as a boy, I didn't have a way to, there was no context for it, right? It was just, here comes the night and the dread that comes with it.
What was I going to say with that? Sorry, I lost my
Oh,
train of
no,
thought.
it's quite right. It just, it's such a formative part of our lives, right? And
Yeah.
then
Oh,
also when I was reading your book, oh, please, yeah, you were going to make a point.
no, I'm sorry. I just remembered with that feeling of being watched. I was always afraid of dolls and my stuffed animals. I had a huge collection of stuffed animals, which I loved, but I also was really kind of afraid of them at night because I felt like they were always watching me. And I really didn't like dolls. I wasn't the typical little girl that liked to play with Barbies and other dolls. They really freaked me out. So I think that was part of it, was feeling like that they were actually, animated and they had some kind of sentience and they were watching me.
But what happened to me was back then, this would have been early 1970s, toy soldiers was a big deal. The little green figurines, and there would be a bazooka guy, there'd be like a flamethrower guy and communications guy, et cetera, et cetera. And I would set them all over my bedroom and create these mock battles, right? And in one recurring dream I had, these hordes of little green figures would come out beneath my bed at night. And again, this brought about the dread, oh, you have to go to sleep now. And then all these little beings will come out from under my bed and harass me, right? And I got so fed up with it that one night, this horde of like little green figures came out from underneath my bed. And the leader seemed to be bigger and more robust than the others, but yay big. And if you remember the Jolly Green Giant logo on the side of like the can of beans or whatever, that's what it reminded me of. It almost seemed to be wearing a similar type of like Tarzan outfit, for lack of a better term. And I was so fed up at that point by these almost nightly visitations by now, with these little hordes of little beings coming out from underneath my bed, that I shoved my index finger into the chest of that little guy, well, the leader. He grabbed my index finger and gave it an almighty twist, and I yelped, ah, in pain, blacked out. Woke up the next morning, my finger was aching like it had really happened, right? But thankfully, I guess because I did that, I wasn't bothered anymore. So, and another thing too is in more recently, a few Halloweens ago, we don't do the Halloween thing anymore. We only did it, because it was a neighborhood thing and it's starting to be big, not really in Australia, but it's starting to get there. And so we had gone out and get this, we'd gone out and gotten a really scary witch, big green nose with a wart at the end, and it made this cackling laugh sound. And it was very realistic, and there was an energy and a vibe to it that made my skin crawl and what little hair I have left stand on end, right? And finally, I got so freaked out by it, I put it in the garage in a box. Thereafter, whenever I had to move that box and I would have like this morbid curiosity to peek inside of it, that feeling would just come over me of just, there was some kind of malevolence attached to that doll. And this thing went into serial production. There's potentially thousands of them out there like that, right?
Oh my gosh.
What we did was we did a hard, what they call a hard rubbish collection here, where each homeowner, they have like six or eight or however many times they can put a load of rubbish out in front of the yard, right? And that's what we did. I just threw that thing out there in the box, and with a lot of old and discarded furniture and what have you, just to get rid of it, get it out of the house, because there was some kind of malevolence attached to that thing.
Glad you got rid of it. Sometimes it's best to just get them out of your life.
Reminds me of that TV show. There was an anthology of about three or four movies that they put out. You might have seen this, but one of the movies was somebody had brought or purchased from a curio shop somewhere this little African warrior demon looking deity that had this like belt around its waist, and the the legend or the curse was, don't let ever let that belt come off because it'll become animated and turn alive. Did you ever see that?
It sounds familiar.
Well, it terrified me as a kid. Whenever there was a rerun, I made sure I didn't watch it, right? But in the process of taking it out of the box and looking at it and cleaning it up, the belt had gotten loose and fell off, and that was the end of the scene and switched to commercials. Uh-oh, right? And then
My gosh.
later, because we used to have commercials on TV, right, and regular TV. Then later on, that little African warrior demon came alive with a spear, right, and was terrorizing the poor lady that picked it up at the curio shop. And also, I was reading in your story about there came a point in time in your small community where the kids, this happened where I lived in San Jose, California, which is a much bigger place, started going through all these exams and tests, right? You talked about the hearing van, and I went through that, and many of us that have had experiences went through that. And typically what they did, I don't know if they just where you live, but like around the second grade, they'd make a big deal about the hearing van is going to come in and make it a real big event, get the kids all excited and motivated. And so we'd all troop outside, and there'd be the hearing van there, and we'd all go in, put the headphones on, and the technicians would be there to, tweaking the knobs and the switches or what have you. And then you'd hold your hand in a fist, and if you heard a tone, you open your hand, right? So with me, what happened was every time they played a certain tone, I'd open my hand, and then this look of confusion would come over the two guys' faces. You can hear that? You can really hear that? I go, yeah, I can hear that. Then they play another tone. I'd open my hand because I heard it. You can hear that? I go, yes, I can hear that. I can hear it clearly, right? And they're all perplexed, right? Because it didn't really happen to any of the other kids. It was happening to me. So fast forward, I'm in high school now, right? 10th grade, sophomore, something like that, or a junior year, I can't remember. And back then, any excuse to stay out of class was fine with me, right? So
Exactly.
Now, instead of pulling out my whole class, they sent a runner from the office and singled me out. James, you have to go clear to the other side of the school to the hearing mobile van for another test. So they plucked me out of class individually this time. And now I troop all the way across the other side of the school. And there was just a handful of guys there this time, right? And I go in there. It was a similar situation. They'd be perplexed. They play these tones. I could hear them. I'd open my hand and, they'd make an adjustment and I'd hear it again. It got fainter and fainter, right? And I've since come to understand that one possible motive for that was perhaps trying to detect implants, right? And so I'd like your thoughts on that. Also, you talked about that familiar pink liquid that they, for some reason, whether it was an oral visit, a dental visit, or something, or you go to the nurse's office, they always had this horrid kind of pink, viscous liquid you drank out of Dixie cups. And then on top of that, you talked about, the psychic test that they put kids through, which happened to me and many other people too, where they just test your psychic abilities and what have you. So take us through that process, because it seems to me that maybe it was an idea come up with Majestic 12 or something, but let's find out just how many kids, potentially are implanted and potentially have these abilities. So yeah, you've got the floor.
Thank you. I definitely, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that have had the same story, basically the same experience. And for me, I had a best friend back then, and she also, we lost touch for about a decade as adults, and we hadn't talked about all these things. And some A bit over time, we started talking about different dreams and different experiences. And then she said, "Did this ever happen to you in school? Do you remember?" Because we went to the same elementary school for a while. And she told me that she had those tests, all of those, and the pink liquid. And I said, "Oh my God, yeah, I thought that was just like dreams I had or something." But I do remember being pretty young in elementary school and being, taken off into different groups and then separately from other people. The hearing test, I think we maybe did have the the van or whatever it was that you're talking about. But I do remember being in the school in the nurse's office as well and having the testing done in there. And it wasn't for all the students, from what I recall. It was kids that were kind of separated out for these tests. And I remember hearing all the weird tones and everything. And I remember several times with the pink liquid or pink tablets, even sometimes. And when I had the tests for the psychic abilities, they took me into a really small room. I don't remember seeing any windows in there. It just seemed almost like a closet. And it had a small wooden desk and a wooden chair. And someone would be sitting across from me sometimes showing me, I always forget what they're called, the Zener cards or something. I remember seeing the symbols and I remember seeing the ink blot cards. And my friend as well remembers that too. And she told me that her mother was actually offered to send her to a private special academy in the area. And in my book, I actually did a lot of research on my area because I found a lot of these things very strange. And they did have quite a few academies in that area back in the 1800s and beyond. And I read that the school system was partially funded by the Oppenheims. The Oppenheims are part of the Oppenheimer family. So there's a lot of weird like connections with New Jersey where I grew up, and including the school I went to as a child for the first three grades. They sent us to an old school there. And my grandfather and my great uncle both went there as well. And I read that during that time, they sent the kids and staff. I don't, it's very unclear who they sent, but the school was involved in sending people for exams to Picatinny Arsenal, which is the military base. It's very close by. It's only, I think, like 13 miles from where I grew up. So there was a bit of military action going there in the town with different things. And I'm trying to think of the other thing that you brought up before. Sorry, I still get a
Yeah,
little
well,
like stuck
you
on
talked
things
about
when I
the,
talk
the
about.
psychic testing that may a lot
Yeah,
of us do,
okay.
and some of it was just very basic, the cards, the wavy lines,
Yeah.
what have you. Others was it seemed like they were trying to determine if you had some kind of psionic or
Oh, they
telekinetic
didn't.
ability, the ability to turn on lights and things like that. So yeah.
I did actually have some of that. I remember specifically sometimes I had this weird sort of giraffe doll thing. It was actually like a scrubbing brush for the bathroom, but it looked like this tall giraffe. It would be always be sitting there when I go into the bathroom. It would be staring at me. And it always freaked me out. And I remember one day just staring at it, like telling it off, basically, and the light bulbs blowing out in the room. And that happened to me a bunch as a kid, where if I focused on lights or if I was upset or angry, the light bulbs would blow out. And I also, with like any kind of wristwatch, I couldn't seem to ever get them to stay working. So the batteries would die and
I had a
drain and all
similar
that.
problem, even with the so-called Timexes, which are supposed to take a licking and keep on ticking, right? But not for me.
Yeah. And let's see what else happened back there. So much went on. My great uncle, he was in the Air Force, and he also, not only was he did go to the same school as me that the kids were allegedly being shipped back and forth to Picatinny Arsenal, but he ended up working at Picatinny Arsenal for a time as an adult, and he went on from there to work for subcontracted companies for NASA and eventually SpaceX before he died And his son, my cousin, also went into that kind of work. So you brought up implants, and I have been wondering about that now. Like you, I had actually never made that kind of correlation that maybe they were testing for implants, but that could be possible. Because as an adult, I definitely found a physical, it seemed to be an implant on me because for a period of time, I was going off in metal detectors in airports and everywhere, and they would always have to use the wand, and they found it in this one place where I had developed a lump. And so I do think I have had at least one implant that I know of, but that wasn't, I don't think it was there, or I never found it as a child. I know as I got, I think I was was in my 40s. I'm 52 now. And that's when I had discovered it. And it was there for about 3 years. And when I after a weird night of sleep, weird dreams, I woke up in the morning and realized that the lump was gone. And there seemed to be a very clear, like an incision where it was that looked like it had healed from a long time ago. So that was very strange. And
Where exactly was this?
it was in my groin area, sort of near my upper thigh. But I, well, it was in my groin area. And basically, I had a, like when I was, I guess in my early 40s or late 30s, I've had a bunch of issues where I've had to go to the hospital because of the endometriosis and other things. And I landed in the hospital one time, and I actually had to stay for a couple of days, and they kept me on observation. And I think it was then that this lump had developed. Like I hadn't had it before. And then after that point, it was there. And I also, that's when I started developing seizures and migraines and all of that too. And this was, it was actually back in 2016, I believe, or 2017, that time period.
That's something that's quite noticeable. I mean, one would know if they have a this new lump there in that part of the anatomy, and coincident to the appearance of that lump, you began having migraines too.
Yeah, and I had never had those before. And so it just makes me wonder if I had some kind of implants from an early age, and maybe they were testing for that. Maybe they are like dormant somehow and they come out at a certain time, they get activated. I don't really know. It's an interesting idea.
Well, conspiracy cast a wide net, and whether the conspirators are human or non-human, and with the Dan Sherman story, we get a very clear example of he was that intuitive communicator working for Air Force Security Service, NSA, and he was in telepathic comms. His job was to be in telepathic comms with these Zeta Grays, who would pass him on information, which he later determined was about the abduction, the locations, the time. Of individuals who are alien abductees, right? So it kind of makes me wonder if somehow through channels, whether it was a decision on the human side, and this is hypothesizing that perhaps the hearing vans and all of that is related to all of this, right? Let's see if there are children and people out there that are implanted that the aliens haven't told us about, perhaps, right? So they just kind of
Yeah.
hedge want to hedge their bets, as you know, because the deal was supposedly the aliens would abduct a limited number of people, eye roll, limited number of people, right? Perhaps they wanted to hedge their bets and see, well, just how many out there are being taken and implanted that they're not telling us about.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting too because oh gosh, you know, because I've had so many health issues, I've had a slew of tests, been on all kinds of medication and treatments, and surgeries, all this other stuff. And I was going through more issues when I had moved to Chicago, which was in, I think, 2022. And I ended up getting a hair follicle analysis and blood work just to see, what might be going awry with different levels of my body. And I did the hair follicle analysis, and it gives you a breakdown of the metals that are in your body and things like that. And so they check for the typical medical metal levels in a person's body to see if they have, toxic levels and whatnot. And I didn't, thankfully, but I had very high elevated levels of other kind of rare metals and obscure minerals and things like that. And no one could really give me a clear answer. And they just, I talked to a doctor and another sort of practitioner, and they were like, yeah, well, sometimes it's just whatever. They really couldn't come up with anything conclusive and just kind of glossed over it. And I always thought it was very strange. I had these metals in my body. And I also felt like because the area that I grew up in is, it's got a high concentration of magnetic anomalies on the magnetic anomaly map of the US. There's a lot of iron ore there, and the iron ore was being used in a lot of the aeronautics technology companies there, ferromagnetic stuff and magnetite in the area. So I always kind of wondered if there was something to that also. And I kind of almost feel like the endometriosis is somewhat due to the environment that we lived in there in that town, because my friend that I mentioned earlier also developed endometriosis and pretty much the same conditions that I have. And my mom has, had a couple of issues too. So I just kind of wonder how it all plays with the metal stuff and perhaps implants. It's very, very
Where
odd.
exactly was this place again?
Where I lived is Budd Lake in Morris County, New Jersey. It's up near the Delaware Water Gap, kind of close to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that whole area, New Jersey, is infamous for active portals and vortex areas and
Yeah.
anomalies. And so it makes sense that a lot of times those places wind up like that precisely because of the mineral content below ground.
Yeah, and I found that a lot of my ancestors had worked with the iron ores in that area. They came from overseas, the usual, like I don't have a direct Mayflower person, but a one that was by marriage. And so everybody came into in colonial times into Massachusetts and Connecticut, those areas, and then branched out on both of my families, my mom and dad's side. And they all sort of ended up in the same area in Pennsylvania where this iron ore mining was going on. So it seems like it was in the generations for a while. And not only were they just miners, I mean, I had on my mom's side, all the men in the last couple of generations had worked in the early aeronautics and flight stuff and engineers and military stuff. So it's I don't know what it all is, but it seems like there's a connection there to me.
And Pennsylvania is another place that's ridden with portals and vortexes and cryptids and what have you. I mean, you look at a place like Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, the site of the 3-day battle there was probably a vortex-ridden area to begin with. And then you have this horrific battle that lasts for 3 days, 58,000 total casualties on both sides. And is it any wonder that people are seeing all kinds of ghostly phenomena, and they'll see entire formations of long dead federal or Confederate troops doing maneuvers, and people stop and
Yeah.
they pull over and look, they think it's some kind of reenactment, and then they all
Right.
disappear, right? So stuff like that happens. And also, I was reading your account, and then eventually you moved to Savannah, Georgia, right?
Yep.
Which I thought was interesting. How close were you to the plutonium separation plant when you lived there?
I'm not quite sure. I know there's like the paper mills nearby and Tybee Island and all that stuff, but I don't really remember hearing anything about that one.
Yeah, just curious because after a while, initially they did a lot of that in Hanford, Washington, but eventually they opened up Department of Energy facility in Savannah River
Yeah,
to
okay.
create and separate plutonium. So I'm just wondering, does endometriosis, is that how you pronounce it? Is that kind of like an autoimmune disorder of some kind? Because I know that
It
in our
is.
field, a lot of women come down with chronic fatigue syndrome, autoimmune disorders, etc.
Yes, it is, and it's been quite misunderstood. It still is, but basically your body attacks itself during the menstrual cycle where you normally bleed. You get all of these different nodules throughout your body, in your organs, can even be in your skin, in your lungs, in your brain even, that bleed also, and the blood has nowhere to go. So it causes a lot of pain and a lot of scar tissue. And sometimes the organs fuse together even. And it is really well known for infertility.
Yeah, somehow you were still conceived and you came into the world, which is
Yeah,
interesting. One
it
has to
is.
wonder if there was some kind of intervention that made that happen.
I don't know. It seems odd for sure.
Your mom ever talk about any kind of paranormal or unusual experiences or missing time episodes or anything like that?
Not too much, not until recent years when my folks both told me that they felt like they had been taken at night and experimented on. When I had shared a lot of experiences my own growing up, and they always just said, "Oh, it's just a nightmare, it's just a dream." And I do remember an experience, not to get off topic a bit there, but I do remember an experience where it was nighttime and I was sleeping and something wakes me up and I see lights outside, and I was taken out of my bed somewhere. And then when I was returned to the bed, my parents, I had moved bedrooms when my brother moved to go to college. I took his room, which was next to my folks' room. And I remember waking up hearing them screaming, like just terrifying screams, like something was happening to them. And eventually I passed out and I asked them the next day, and they said everything was fine. They don't remember anything. They slept great. And meanwhile, I was like completely traumatized. And so back then, they just didn't really, they thought it was just that I was having nightmares and stuff. But more recently, I'd say the last 4 or 5 years, they told me, like my dad told me in particular, that he was woken up and dragged out of bed and taken somewhere. And my mom kind of chimed in saying that she said, "Yeah, we think we were being taken at night and experimented on," which was just shocking to me. To be honest, it was shocking because it just seemed like they just didn't believe in any of that kind of stuff, that it couldn't be possible.
Way the mind control is exerted by the aliens, sometimes the fiercest skeptics are actually abductees, where the subject matter is brought up and they become downright hostile because of
Yeah.
all the programming. And I've seen this at lectures where, excuse me, the response could vary from people simply just falling asleep, right? Or they get agitated and have to get up and stretch their legs or go out and get a smoke, or they become openly hostile, right? When you bring up certain subject matter. And to a more or less degree, a lot of these hostile aliens, they can become quite rough and some are not really known for their bedside manner, let's say. So it seems that the ETs that were involved with your family kind of fell into that latter category. I mean, that one ET picks you up and throws you back onto the bed, and then they're so blatant and brazen when they abduct your parents that they just drag them out. It's like, no pretense that let's make it so they don't remember this. We'll just, take them and return them missing time, et cetera. They go right in there with both guns blazing, so to speak.
And what you're saying there about the hostile part of it, when I was having sleep paralysis, I would often see these sort of reptilian looking creatures. And I was subjected to watching the most horrific torture of animals and people during those episodes with these creatures. I don't even know where I would get that from at that age. It started from, at least from what I recall, at the around the 15-year mark. And yeah, there were scary movies then, but I didn't watch a whole lot of those. And what I was seeing was far beyond something a person would be seeing in a movie at that point. I'm not really sure where that would be coming from, but I definitely felt like I was being forced to watch it and experience it.
So you would
And
be in varying states of consciousness. Would you be sleeping or dreaming, or would you be wide awake and these images are being pushed into your mind, your mind's eye?
all of it, basically. It could happen while I was in a dream. It could happen while I was sort of like in a half awake, half asleep state in the sleep paralysis, which is usually the case. And it happened so many times, I have lost track of. I just see certain flashes of things and know that it had happened a long time. And I also had many, many dreams and sleep paralysis sort of mixed together with being experimented on and watching other people being experimented on, as well as some animals. I remember a dream in particular where I was in some kind of, it almost seemed like a warehouse, but I don't really know. It's just a big open space with women in cages and dogs in cages next to them. And I remember being in shock, like, oh my God, where am I? And there was a woman in the cage in front of me that was crying and begging for my help. And so I let her out of there, and she was naked except for this giant, it almost looked like a diaper that she was wearing, covering her. And she had a long incision across her abdomen that was bleeding out through the bandage thing. And I was trying to get her out of there and help her get, I was trying to grab some towels to cover her. But I remember just looking around at the other women were like kind of, they seemed drugged, like they were unconscious, most of them, and the dogs, and just going, oh my God, what is going on here? And I had had many dreams of people being in cages, hanging in these large cages from the ceiling, and having to share, like I remember being in one where I had to share a bed with a woman. Because that was like our cell or whatever, and looking down and seeing raw meat on a counter, and that was going to be our food. So, had a lot of gruesome experiences.
What are your thoughts about that? Did you feel at the time or in hindsight that you were there astrally somehow and you were observing this like at an oversoul level, someone or something, or perhaps your very oversoul said, okay, I think she needs to see this? Or do you think you were there physically or you were remote viewing it? Or because it seems to me from what you describe, that woman reacted to you, pleaded for help, and you let her out, and you did your best to help her. So there seems to be an element of physicality there. There were you're physically there. What are your thoughts about that? And how often did it seem like you had these types of visions, dreams, or experiences?
Pretty regularly. And in hindsight, I do think that I'm not sure. I don't know if it was an astral state or what it was, but I have had just countless of these over the last several decades. And what I was going to say, I sort of lost my train of thought there, but I was going to say that in a lot of these dream states, whatever you want to call them, I will see my reflection, and my body that I'm in is not me the way I look now. I'll be other people, almost like I'm just wearing a person suit or something, another avatar. And I will see my reflection in a mirror or in a window or a shiny elevator, and I'll be all these different people. And so sometimes I think that I'm like my consciousness or my soul, whatever, maybe both are either remote viewing something or being like I'm being swapped out into
Master
another.
indwelling in them as an infiltrator, as observer to see what's going on. And
Right. Yeah. And sometimes I'm participating and sometimes people can see me, but oftentimes I'm the observer and I'm just watching things.
did you observe from the standpoint of always being on the outside, so to speak, rather than were you ever a captive or not in
Oh
these?
yeah, I've been captive too, and I remember one in particular dream or whatever it was experience where I was in a hospital with military, and all the rooms, it was very sterile looking, it was all mostly white, and the rooms had glass walls with sliding glass doors, automatic doors. So people could observe. There was no privacy. And I remember waking up on a gurney, seeing my belly as if I was pregnant. And I've never had any children, so, and I've never been pregnant, but in this dream state, whatever it was, I was fully pregnant and I had IVs in me. And I remember panicking and ripping all the tubes out of me, all the IVs and everything, and getting out of the room and then running out to the front of the hospital, where there's like a big cul-de-sac in the front, and getting out through the sliding glass doors. And there were some military people getting out of a vehicle. So I panicked and I ran back into the hospital and I ran down a hallway into like the nearest doorway. It was a stairwell, and I pushed the door open and ran down to some kind of basement area that looked very old, like it hadn't been used in years. And there was a reptile being there that saw me and started chasing me, and I had to hide sort of under the stairwell behind something, and then I woke up. So I've had that kind of experience.
When you started talking about this, you mentioned at the outset of this particular aspect that you had related reptilians to the onset of the dreams, quote unquote, where you were seeing all these animals. And was it just animals that were being slaughtered and tortured, or people as well?
No, it was people too. It was absolutely disgusting. It would be these dark rooms and there'd be blood and people and animals, like
Like an abattoir where the people, the things just getting slaughtered and
yeah,
cut
they
up and.
were impaled and it was just absolutely gruesome.
Did you get the feeling that that was happening at the present time, or was it something in the distant past, like in the Middle Ages or something, when you saw those particular things, or were you given to understand that at a higher level that this is something that's happening in real time somewhere?
It's hard to say. It always felt like it was just happening right then. But I definitely have had dreams and visions of being in different time periods, although I don't really recall specifically for the most part, seeing these type of reptilian beings in those, I just remember kind of living through different time periods and wearing different clothing and seeing different architecture or decor around me.
You've always had the gift of the second sight, the etheric third eye vision, along the lines of a mystic or a seer. And just a quick point before we end this first fascinating segment. One could only speculate the basis for those experiences you described, because I know that, like, for example, switching consciousness from one body to another, that's routinely done to the point where I've had friends, they were on a big space station and their consciousness was put into an alien body. And then that alien body was sent off to some like enemy space station somewhere of an alien or a like a hostile alien civilization race. And their job was to go into that space station, observe, spy, and do whatever it was meant to do, right? And then there are other examples when either our consciousness is taken out by some organization or agency, what have you, and placed into another being or by someone or something, some controller, or it's something that we do at an oversoul level for whatever reason. I think it's a mixture. It's not all one thing. Sometimes it could be a controller that does that, because my friend Lorena clearly remembers times when she would be outside, she would be shunted outside of her body by the Navy, and she would be standing there. This is in the underground base, or perhaps even, off world or another alternate reality somewhere, but it was clearly in a Navy alien kind of facility. And she would see herself taken out of her physical body, and then the Navy would place this shadow type being inside of her physical body and then set it off on some mission somewhere. And then I've had Delta on my show, and she's a dear friend. She's pretty much one of us. And she recalls her consciousness being placed into a young girl, a child. And this child was in captivity. It was in a big mansion that was used for trafficking, human trafficking. And they had a high-tech setup where all these bidders, these pedos from all over the world, were part of this dark web setup where it's almost like they can look through. In the old days, we had the Sears and Roebuck catalogs, right? But now, just like you can access a menu online in real time in these remote locations, all these elite billionaire pedophile types, they would be able to, with these webcams or even more sophisticated cameras, look at these children and make bids for particular children, right? And Delta, her consciousness, her adult ass-kicking, operator consciousness was put into this little girl for, to experience that and the process of being bid on, to being sold, to being trafficked, right? So it's possible some other force, some higher force, or some opposing force perhaps put her in that body to observe how that operation was. Maybe it was an oversold decision that's really of her own volition, she did that, right? So it runs the gamut, and thank you for sharing that, because I know that at a very deep level, that's painful to have observed and experienced, and I can imagine the helplessness you must have felt. Well, I wish I could rescue all these people, but there's only so much you can do.
Well, I just want to say real quick, I remember at least a few instances where I had been at some elite mansion and down in a basement in a tunnel system and had observed some of these things going on as well. And also, we should talk about the transportation hub at some point because
Let's
that
get
has
into
been
that
a
and
theme.
let's get into that in part two. Can you let our viewers know and listeners know how they can find your work and how they can find your book?
You can find my work on my website, which is rendezvousbrand.com, and the book is on the website, and it's also in my link tree, which is the best link to use for me.
For our dear listeners and viewers out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to the cosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.